Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Tonight, exclusive coverage of Kevin Herr on video golf playing the par 3 at the Masters.
I'll be there for that.
I know you're playing. And I've hired your son to be the announcer.
Doesn't that make you feel just relaxed and think of a nice, sunny fairway?
Yeah, and then Tiger throws a club. All right.
Then Tin Cup hits a shovel off the tee.
That's actually where they filmed. Tin Cup is considered being one of the top 10 underrated golf courses in the country. It's a golf course in Arizona. And the 18th hole that they show him trying to get into is actually the fourth hole.
Really? That's the fourth?
Mm-hmm. On that golf course.
Interesting.
They just thought for drama, they just thought that was the best hole to use as 18 for the movie. That hole is actually the hole that you see him get the 12 on, where he keeps taking the 3-wood and dumping it into the water, or hitting it on the green and rolling back into the water, is actually on that golf course, the fourth hole. It bothers you, I know that.
No, I think that's really cool that you know that. What's the, at the Masters, what's the, let's see, Amen Corner starts at what, 12?
12, 13, 14.
Yeah, that's Golden Bell, Azalea, and Chinese Fir.
Yes.
Now, which one has Hogan Bridge?
Yes, that would be 12.
Is that okay, that's Bell. All right.
Saracen Bridge is 15.
All right. I couldn't remember.
Yes. So, we're going to have Joe Hughes from Augusta National join us briefly on Friday, as a matter of fact. And Augusta National, designed by Bobby Jones, but also by Alistair McKenzie. Alistair McKenzie also designed the University of Michigan golf course, where on game day they park cars.
Yeah, I still don't get that.
Alistair rolls over in his grave every time that happens.
Although, right after a big football game, the roughs are easy to come out of.
Yeah, yeah. But Alistair McKenzie designed Augusta National, along with Bobby Jones. And Augusta National, the key shot at Augusta National, it is a second-shot golf course. No, it is a second-shot golf course. If you can get control of where your drive is, now that second shot, do you keep it below the hole? Do you give yourself a shot at a birdie? You get to 13. You talked about Azalea. You get to 13. That second shot, that's your risk-reward shot right there. Can you clear Rays Creek, and can you put it on the green and put yourself in a position where maybe you can get eagle? 13 is a birdie hole. Same thing with 15. 15, risk-reward, second shot. It's a par 5, but it's the second shot. What happens? Can you put yourself in the green and give yourself a shot at an eagle? Or do you go clear the green and go into the holding area? Augusta National is a brilliant second-shot golf course. And that's the key shot all the way through the round. It's how you, you know, it's what you do with your second shot on that golf course that repeatedly tells the story of how your round is going to go. Yeah, you have to putt. Yes, you have to drive. But it's the placement of that shot. And that's the way that course was designed. It was designed to be a second shot golf course. So tonight, when you're playing your video game, remember that. And you love the music, and you love...
Oh, music is great.
Do you watch any of the golf after the Open?
I'll watch the British. I'll watch the U.S. Open.
No. Do you watch any golf after the Open?
Like, oh, after the Open of the... Yeah, I'll watch quite a bit of the Masters. But I'll watch it. I'll watch it more online because I'll pick the stuff I want to see.
You watch it online?
Yeah, because I can pick like watching aim. I'll watch just Amen Corner. So I'll watch that. I'll have it maybe on in front of me on Sunday, but I'll have Amen Corner on and just watch the guys come through Amen Corner or whoever they're featuring on the featured pair on Sunday.
Yeah, that's you normally, so they'd be the last two guys.
Not always.
They're the leaders.
Here, I want you to listen to this. I just found. Go ahead.
They're the leaders. Okay.
Not always.
Usually the last three groups is where the champion comes from.
All right, now this.
No offense, I've drawn my statement from experience.
All right, fine. This is Jim Nance from the video game talking about the video game.
This is the chance for people to finally say, "Wow, I get to go to Augusta." I mean, everyone has this dream of one day going to Augusta, either to play it or to attend the Masters tournament. This game allows them to really be walking right down the middle of the fairway. It's going to be so real to people. The biggest thing that you really feel about Augusta the first time you walk on the grounds, and I checked it out going through the game to see if it was captured, and it was, is how hilly the course is.
There you go.
Are you then exhausted by the time you're done?
Jim Nance, in his own words.
Are you exhausted by the time you're done playing around?
Nah.
Well, then obviously it's not as hilly for you as it is for the person who walks it.
That's it. I thought maybe hearing Jim Nance talk about it, but
he's paid to say that.
You've become a flowering crabapple about this.
He's paid to say that. They gave him some pretty good coin to sit there and go, it's really realistic.
I probably did, yeah. How many par threes are at the Masters?
How many par threes are at the Masters?
Yes.
Four.
That is correct. Can you name them?
Can I name them?
Yeah.
16, 12...
16,
12. Hold on a second. 16, 12. Three and seven.
Three and six. But can you name the holes? Not the number.
Oh, for God's sake, no. The heck? Who cares?
Flower and Crabapple is the four.
Yeah, yeah.
Juniper's the brother. Six. Golden Bell is the 12. And Red Bud is the 16th. Now, here's the one I would like to know why each hole is named after a tree or a shrub. Do you know why?
Because there's nothing but trees and shrubs.
No,
of course.
No.
I really don't know. And I speak to the audience. I don't care.
The course was formerly a plant nursery.
Okay. That's fine.
That's your education. That's fine. That's your educational fun fact.
Yeah, okay. It's great.
I also did some research because I wanted to find out how much a membership was. Membership costs are not really stated publicly, but
yes, we know.
The best you could find is somewhere between $10,000 and $30,000 a year.
Believe me, they're all executives. They can all afford it. And you have to be voted in and approved by the membership group.
Yeah. Yes, that's also correct. Notable members include Warren Buffett, Pete Coors, Bill Gates, Roger Goodell, Pat Hayden, Lou Holtz, Condi Rice, and Swanee.
Lynn Swann's a member, huh?
He is a member.
I know him a little bit. This could be my chance for Jack and me to get out there.
I voted for him once.
Huh? Oh, you know, for governor.
I voted for him once.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, good. Well, I've met a member, so let's see. I wonder if I can. You can bring Jack and me out there. He lives just up the street from Jack. This would be great. Then I could actually tell you how hilly it really is. A friend of mine here in State College, Tim Lovell, does a lot of work in turf grass here. So they'll bring him down, because the superintendent at Augusta National is a Penn State graduate. And they'll bring guys down to work on the course during the Masters. And Tim Lovell's always been a guy that has always been brought down to work at Augusta National. And they assigned Tim two holes, you know, take care of it. In other words, cut it, rake it, whatever, you know, you have to work on these two holes. And Tim said that the reward for them is that Memorial Day weekend, they allow them to come back and they let them play the course.
That would be cool.
Yeah. Tim said it's unbelievable. I said, how does it feel standing at 12? He goes, it's 150 yards, man. He says, you think to yourself, yeah. And then you look around, there's that creek, there's the dogwoods and the azaleas in the back of it, the green is like thin. Like, I don't know if I can make this shot. So that's the scariest hole in the golf course. It's 153 yards, the scariest hole in the golf course. All right.
I got an update from the Masters. Jack Nicklaus at the par 3 contest on the fourth hole went just a little beyond the cup, rolled it back in for an ace.
And he's your clubhouse leader. Back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. See you in Kia.
Sunbury Motors Kia. It's the great tent event this weekend only.
Oh, I'm excited. Should I bring my sleeping bag and maybe some marshmallows?
Not that kind of tent. We're slashing prices on all vehicles.
Now, why would I get a better deal under a tent than at the dealership?
Because tents are...
No, stop. Why not just go down to Sunbury Motors Kia any day of the week and get great prices on a new Kia? In fact, I see they have 0% financing for up to 66 months on all 2015 Optimas and Fortes.
But we'll have balloons at the tent event.
That's okay. I'd rather go see the local guys at Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip in Hummel's Wharf and get a new car with a fantastic 10-year, 100,000-mile warranty. Or I'll check them out online at sunburymotors.com.
KMF financing to all qualified customers.
And here's Jack at number 4.
It's a 130-yard par 3 across the water. Really, really a good golf hole. What a beautiful play. Come on, come on, come on, Jack. Yes.
Ah, yes!
Yes!
Jack Nicklaus with his ace at the par 3 contest today. It'll be the last major roar of the tournament that you'll hear.
Why wouldn't you hear another roar at the tournament?
Because Nicklaus ain't going to make any more
shots. Oh, you mean for him. I see what you're saying.
No, I mean for the tournament itself. I mean,
really?
The roars are going to be reserved for if Tiger Woods does something or Phil Mickelson does something, maybe McIlroy, right? Where there's an emotional attachment to the player. There are not a lot of emotional attachments to the players right now.
Now, who did you say would be on that list?
McIlroy.
Okay.
Mickelson and Woods.
Yeah, all right. Phil, I was going to say, has to be on that list, yeah.
Maybe Bubba Watson because he's won now twice. But one thing that you've discovered over the years, the roars that echo through the pines are the ones that are for the emotional attachments. They'll tell you 86 was unbelievable when Nicklaus charged the back nine and won. Unbelievable. The sound. Tiger's been, had a great time, great week. He's been fun, the whole thing. I'm going to kind of take an approach that I'm from Missouri when it comes to his game right now. He's going to have to show me he can play. It's one thing to sit there and look great on the range. Another thing, hey, what a great practice round. I watched Sergio Garcia. I followed some of his practice round at the U.S. Open. He was tremendous. And Dick and I both looked at each other and said, he will not be in the game by the weekend. Because there's a different pressure on the practice round as opposed to the actual round. It's totally different.
Right now, by the way, Rory McIlroy leads the world golf rankings, followed by Stenson Watson.
Yeah. Yeah, Henrik Stenson's a very good player. Very good player.
He is Swedish?
Yes.
I mean, the name kind of gave it away, but I wasn't 100% sure.
Martin Keimer, the defending U.S. Open champ, basically told everybody, he said, look, just let Tiger play, okay? Just, don't try to guess what he does. Just let him play.
I'll be rooting for Phil. Right.
Well, he roots for you.
Phil's a guy that's really, but Phil is a guy that's really easy to root for.
Well, you know what? And what's interesting is that what Woods has done as part of this feel-good thing. Woods, you know what they had to stop him from doing yesterday to get him into the interview 10 on time?
Signing?
Yes. And that is something he normally does not do.
Very true.
I mean, I told you the story about the golf balls and the charity.
Mm-hmm.
That Brad Faxon and Billy Andrade, they have the CVS tournament that benefits charity, children's hospitals in Rhode Island. So they came up with this idea to have all the living Masters champions sign golf balls. So that, Nicklaus signed, Palmer signed, Mickelson signed. I mean, they signed. I said the only guy they couldn't get to do it was Woods. They're like, what? Well, Woods was out there signing autographs. See that Mickelson signs autographs all the time. And guess what you discover when Phil Mickelson signs an autograph for you? Oh, come on.
What?
He's right-handed.
Really?
Yes, Phil Mickelson plays golf left-handed, but he's right-handed.
He signs right-handed. Maybe he's just ambidextrous.
No, father taught him to play left-handed.
Really? That's interesting.
Yep. Power arm's the right arm. But Phil Mickelson is actually right-handed. He plays left-handed. Yeah, and some people are different in that way. Joe Paterno threw a ball right-handed, wrote left-handed.
Well, I've known a lot of people, like in bowling, that have bowled right-handed but were left-handed just because that's the way they were taught.
Yep. Joe Paterno threw right-handed, wrote left-handed.
I used to complain to him, though. You've been given a... God gave you a gift of being left-handed in this sport, and you're using your right hand. There's something wrong there.
Yeah, but Phil, yeah, but Phil's right-handed. And he signs. When I went around the U.S. Open at Marion, the galleries for Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson were the largest, without question. But the difference between the two galleries was incredibly different. Woods, you could tell they wanted to be there because it was Tiger Woods. Oh my goodness, it's Tiger Woods. It's the best player in the world. It's Tiger Woods. Mickelson's gallery loved Mickelson. It wasn't just that Mickelson's really good. They genuinely loved the guy.
As I said, it's hard not to like him.
Incredible difference between the two. Now, I've told the story before, but it's one of my favorite stories. U.S. Open, it was the third round. McIlroy, Woods, and Bernard Fernandez were playing together. And Tiger hits a shot. McIlroy hits a shot. Fernandez hits a shot on the 15th hole on Gulf House Road there. They all land on the green, and the crowd starts going, "Hey, come on, Tiger, go, Tiger." Then that died down. "Come on, Rory, go, Rory, come on, Rory." And this guy standing right next to me screams out, "Come on, other guy."
I just wonder who the person is at every golf tournament when he tees off, goes, "You're the man."
I'm sure that's in your game.
Actually, they do say something, but I don't know what it is.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, great to have you with us. I'm in the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, it's 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. A par 3 contest is today. And the tournament gets underway tomorrow. Looking forward to it. It's when everybody gets into golf this time of the year.
Yeah, at least for a week anyway.
For a week. You talking about for a week?
Well, come on. How many golf tournaments do you watch in the season that aren't one of the majors? And I do consider Pebble Beach being a major simply because of the fact that it's Pebble Beach.
I was talking about just getting into golf.
Oh, okay.
And for a lot of people, the season begins. 10th championship last night, Gino Auriemma. Great, great record there. Great record. But, you know, I get a little... You were talking about ESPN before. You know, he ties John Wooden's record at 10. Why didn't you say last year he tied Red Auerbach? I mean, if your argument is basketball's basketball, he got 9. He tied Red Auerbach last year. Got 10. Now he's with Phil Jackson. His accomplishment is a tremendous accomplishment. But just like you sit there and you don't say that Russ Rose is the greatest women's volleyball coach ever. He won't say that, but I'll say that. Russ Rose is the greatest women's volleyball coach ever. And could Russ Rose coach men's volleyball and be great? Yes, he could. No question about it. But nobody sits there, for example, and compares Russ Rose's 7 national championships, which is the record for women's volleyball, to Al Skates. All right, I'll answer your question. Who is Al Skates? Al Skates in men's volleyball won 19 national championships at UCLA. Okay? Nobody compares. Okay? And the games are relatively the same. I mean, there's no real difference between men's volleyball and women's volleyball. There are actually some differences between men's basketball and women's basketball, one being the size of the ball. But that's irrelevant. Each one is a separate entity. And to sit there, and ESPN has made this mistake forever in terms of trying to gain some acceptance by making it seem like it's all one big hodgepodge. You know, Pat Summitt has X amount of wins, and Gino Auriemma has 10 championships. It's its own separate entity. Phil Jackson has won, what is he, what, 11 championships? 11 NBA championships. John Wooden's won 10 men's basketball championships. Gino Auriemma's won 10 women's basketball championships. All three of them are the record holders in their sport, and all three of them are among the greatest coaches of all time. Just like Toe Blake won 8 Stanley Cups, and Red Auerbach won 9 NBA championships, and Vince Lombardi won 5 NFL championships, and Bill Belichick's won 4. Casey Stengel won 10 World Series. Joe McCarthy. Hey, it's its own sport. It's not a combo job. In saying that Gino Auriemma has 10, now you're going to say, oh, hey, he just passed Red Auerbach? I mean, they're both basketball, correct? That's why you've got to be able to have some common sense about things. Don't shove a narrative down my throat that he's tied John Wooden on the all-time college basketball list. Gino Auriemma is the record holder on the women's basketball list. John Wooden's the record holder on the men's basketball list. Phil Jackson's the record holder on the NBA basketball list. They're all separate lists. Does it mean one coach is better than the other? No, it doesn't mean that at all. But you have to recognize that they're different games. I mean, you never hear Al Skates' name come up when they mention Russ Rose as the record holder with 7 national championships, because Russ Rose is the record holder with 7 national championships in the women's game. Al Skates is the men's record holder with 19 national championships. Nobody's tried to combo that. Nobody. What Gino Auriemma has done is very special. Very, very special. What John Wooden did was very, very special. What Phil Jackson's done is very special. What Al Skates did, very special. What Russ Rose has done continues to be special. What Cale Sanderson's done with 4 straight, special. Now, how many Dan Gable won? 18? Something like that. Then Dan Gable won 18, some number, right? You know, I mean, that's... It seems to be the one thing that they try to combo with, and it's just not logical. It's not logical. They're different sports. And it's not calling them out as different sports because it makes men's basketball look better. If you love women's basketball, then that is the better game. If you love men's basketball, then that's the better game. It's all what you love as a fan as to what you think the better game is. It's just a matter of opinion. If you love the passing and precision and how they play and how disciplined UConn plays women's basketball, great. Then that's your sport. You're not trying to compare them one another. But they're different sports. That's all. And there's nothing wrong with it being different sports. And and it's convenient, for example, that that Gino Auriemma's comments about the men's game, remember last week, that was a big story, right? Well, guess how out of context it was. Guess what the next sentence was? Do you know? That the women's game is at times unwatchable and there's not enough talent spread around. We get a little picky and choosy as to how we do headlines these days. Way too picky, way too choosy. It's one thing I've always liked about radio and what our approach is. When we give you a quote from somebody and we play it back for you in the air, that is the quote. Not the money quote, the quote. So, a great run by UConn. And he said something interesting. He said that he didn't really trust his team until about January. They lost their second game of the year to Stanford. So, 15 national titles for Dan Gable, by the way. And great coaches come in all forms. And they're all different sports. And there's nothing wrong with saying it's a different sport. Nothing. It's not sexist. It's not anything. It's just an obvious statement of fact. It's a different sport. Nothing wrong with that. Difference good. Mentioned yesterday some of the things basketball-wise I want to see change rule-wise. They're subtle. Not one of them solves the problem. I mean, most of it does come down to officiating as to how you want the game officiated, not the quality of the officiating, but how you want it officiated. That's going to be an issue moving forward. But I'd go 30-second shot clock, wider arc at the bottom of the lane on block charge. I would like to see the shot clock reset at 10. Excuse me, reset at 20 on an offensive rebound instead of 30. You know, to help pick up the pace just a little bit. Because you're already down there. What do you need the full 30 seconds for? To bring it back out to midcourt and waste 10 seconds? And I'd like to see that. I'd also like to see either for a conference, centralized replay, or a replay booth in the arenas to have them take a look at the replay instead of the three officials on the floor. I'd like to see replay involve final 2 minutes, whether the ball's out of bounds or not, whether the ball was pinned against the backboard, or hit the backboard first on goaltending. Not on a shot that's blocked and whether the arc is on the way down. No. But if the ball hits the backboard, whether it's pinned or came off the backboard first, I think that should be there. Shot clock should be also reviewable. And each coach should have one challenge during the game, and that challenge is an automatic timeout at that point. Each coach should have a challenge. You have to be then judicious as to when you want to use your challenge. And I'll give you an example. Big Ten championship game. Wisconsin's playing Michigan State. Josh Gosser makes a great effort and saves the ball from going out of bounds. Except here's the issue. On replay, Gosser actually was on the line and was out of bounds when he saved it. Now, if Tom Izzo had a challenge, he could have used that challenge at that point to say, I want to challenge whether or not that's our ball. And I would like to, but it has to be incorporated with a timeout because I don't, you know, there's too many, you already have five timeouts, for goodness sakes. How many timeouts do you need? I mean, seriously, I've done a lot of games in my career. How many timeouts do you really need? And If you want to use that challenge in the first half, so be it. You want to use your challenge at the end of the game, so be it. Can't use the challenge on a foul. For example, when Evan Samatras dragged down Jordan Dickerson, Pat shouldn't be allowed to challenge that. It's a foul call. It's a judgment call. But, for example, when the ball went off Tim Frazier out of bounds at Purdue and Ted Hillary missed the call, well, that call actually would have been automatic. There was seconds left. Penn State would have gotten the ball back. Under the current rules, they would have. But say that happened with 5 minutes ago. Pat could challenge that if he wanted to. Boom. And would have been, and a play like that. Each coach should get one challenge where they say, look, I want that challenged. I don't care what it is. You want to challenge whether it's a shot clock violation. You want to challenge whether it was a goaltend on a pin play on the backboard. You want to challenge whatever. They should get one challenge each. And they should have either a centralized replay at the Big Ten office in Chicago or a replay official in a booth with a technician that has big screens that can review it. Like they do in football. That's what I'd like to see. A lot of money. There's a lot of money involved in these games. A lot of money. And I'm not talking about Vegas money. I'm talking about just pure money that benefits athletic departments across the country. And I think if you're smart about it, you can do it in such a way where you're not delaying games left and right to them walk over and look at monitors, where you can go, boom, hey. And also that fourth official should be the one determining whether it's a flagrant one or a flagrant two. The officials on the floor, no need for them to do it. The other officials should be able to take a look at the screen whether it's flagrant one or flagrant two. That's what I'd like to see. The Phillies play tonight. Good luck on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Jay, I thought you were going to play the Masters theme.
No, we'll save that for tomorrow. And then Friday. Oh, believe me, I'll get my play out of it.
And what vehicle would you drive up Magnolia Lane if you had a chance to?
That's the one going into it, right? Not the one that actually drives on the course. I thought maybe you were trying to set me up for something. That's all.
Just do the commercial.
I thought you were just trying to set me up, so I just wanted to play it safe.
We're getting toward 5 o'clock. Sunbury Motors would like to know, to let everybody know what you're driving this week.
I am driving the 2015 Kia Cadenza. And one thing I found that I thought was interesting, yesterday, a little bit of rain, not a ton of rain. So you sit there and fiddle with the intermittent wiper to try and find the sweet spot. Well, with this particular vehicle, you don't have to because there's an automatic setting. And I didn't realize it until I started driving and then got the setting where I thought was good. And all of a sudden, it started to pick up the pace a little bit as I got behind a tractor trailer and started to spray a little more. And then it went like to fast speed and high speed. Well, here it actually senses exactly how much wiper you need. So you don't have to fiddle with it anymore. You just set it for sensitivity, and you're good to go. One of the great features on the 2015 Kia Cadenza that you'll find at Sunbury Motors, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Say hi to Kyle and the folks there, and Austin, and make sure you check out the Kia Cadenza while you're there.
I'm sure Kyle and Austin appreciated how I set up that piece.
I think they did.
Unfortunately...
I just wanted to make sure you were not setting me up to say, oh, that's actually one of the holes you'd be driving on. Just wanted to make sure.
No.
You do that to me, though, and you know it.
Not when it comes to commercials.
Everything else, maybe.
But this is a sponsored thing here.
Just saying. I was just making sure I wasn't getting set up.
Set up? Yeah, I set you up. I set you up to knock the ball out of the park, and you bunted.
Well, you know, you got to go with your strengths. And, well, that's bunting was never a strength, so forget that. Awful.
Awful. All right. Tomorrow the Masters does get underway. Looking forward to it. And it's one of the great things of this week. You go from the college basketball championship right into the Masters, and it also avoids Phillies talk, which is tremendous.
Not a bad thing.
By the time the decade's out, the Phillies will be major contenders again.
With every new day, there's fresh hope.
No, but you know what? But they have the cash. They have the ballpark. They've got the fan base that they can attract people to get in there that would want to play in a great place like Philadelphia.
The key thing, though, in that statement was they have to attract, not develop.
Well, but I think they have to attract them. I think they made they got caught up in the times and they did the wrong thing. All right, and the $25 million contract and the $20-plus million contracts for Ryan Howard and for Cliff Lee matched up with the other contracts of the times, but those contracts were wrong, too. I mean, the Howard contract's on the same par as the A-Rod contract. Neither one is worth that kind of money. Neither one. Okay? I mean, it's simple as that. Just not. You've got to be able to take the Ryan Howard contract and get 2.5 players out of that contract. You really do. You got to get like 2.5 really good players out of that contract. You take 2 Ryan Howard contracts and make it 5. Now you're building a team that's well-rounded. The Phillies are not a well-rounded team and have not been a well-rounded team. Hey, they've been like, you know, big contract here, big contract there, and they tried to fill in the gaps with a lot of also-rans. All right, Ben Revere is a fourth outfielder on most teams. Grady Sizemore absolutely is a fourth outfielder on most teams. These are your 2-year starters. I mean, this is how they've filled this team up. They have filled this team up with, you know, I'll give you an example. The Pittsburgh Penguins right now are struggling. They have 4 A players on the team, 4 A's. They have a couple of B's and a whole bunch of C's and D's. Well, that's where the Phillies are. They have like 2 or 3 A players, a couple of Bs, and a whole bunch of Cs and Ds. That's how you finish in last place. You've got to be able to round your team out where, yeah, you got a couple of As, but a whole bunch of B players. All right? I mean, that's where you have to be. And the Phillies, the gap between their A player, they almost skip over the B players, and they're loaded with Cs and Ds. That's where the Phillies are as an organization. By the end of the decade, they should have that balanced out.